Hello, this is Sarah with the News Gazette, dated July 3rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "I'm Glad to Be American." Naturalization ceremony at Hotel Royer sees 56 immigrants become citizens, by Luke Taylor. Urbana. For Lydia Shetea, becoming a U.S. citizen was all about patience. "The time was long, but the process was easy," she said. "You just have to submit everything they asked for." Originally from Congo, Shetea moved to the U.S. to follow her husband, who came over in 2013. She's with him in Bloomington now, where she's a nurse, student, and mother. "I'm proud, and I feel really excited because I've been waiting for this moment a long time, almost a year," she said. "Now I'm a citizen. I'm happy." Shetea was one of the 56 people who swore an oath of allegiance to the United States at a ceremony Thursday at the Hotel Royer in downtown Urbana, conducted by U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric Long and attended by U.S. Senator Dick Durbin and Urbana Mayor Deshaun Williams, each of whom shared their thoughts and personal experiences about the American dream. Shetea said she appreciated what they all said. "They made us feel not different from actually American," she said. "The judge and senator say we have to be proud of our background. It doesn't matter where we came from or that we have an accent, we have to be proud of it. I'm glad to be American and to have the background I have." Countries of origin for this group of new citizens included Brazil, Canada, China, Congo, Cuba, Equatorial Guinea, Germany, Honduras, India, Jordan, South Korea, Libya, Lebanon, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Nigeria, North Macedonia, Pakistan, Philippines, Togo, the United Kingdom, Vietnam, and Yemen. Durbin shared a story about his grandmother, who brought her three children from Lithuania to join her husband in St. Louis in 1911. She went through the naturalization process 20 years later. Before she died, he asked her about her naturalization certificate. She said, "I know just where it is," and she went and got the certificate, he told the New Citizens. "I pulled it out of the brown envelope, and a little piece of paper fell to the floor. It was the $2.50 receipt she had received for filing her paperwork. She'd kept it just in case anyone from the government ever challenged her right to citizenship." "I can tell that story because that's my story," Durbin said. "That's my family's story, and that's the American story that can be repeated all over this room, time and time again." He said that when his family arrived in the U.S., some welcomed them with open arms while others didn't, and it would be the same today. "You have an opportunity to make this a better nation," he told the New Citizens. Long spoke of his own path from humble beginnings to the role of federal judge, encouraging the people who chose to settle in the U.S. to see the opportunities presented to them, not just the nation's issues. He quoted Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King Jr.'s hopes and dreams for the country, and said those same goals should be at the forefront today. "Whenever our nation has fallen short of its ideals, those seeking justice have not abandoned America's founding principles," Long said. "Instead, they've appealed to them." Image 1. Lydia Shetea, shown with her husband, whom she followed over from the Congo, waves an American flag in celebration at the naturalization ceremony where she became a U.S. citizen Thursday afternoon at the Hotel Royer in downtown Urbana. Rob Locates. "Representing the United States of America was one of the greatest honors of my life. Throughout the week, we've asked community members to share stories of when they felt proudest to be an American." Among the contributors, another panel in today's Big Ten D1, and here, wheelchair racing legend and University of Illinois alumna Jean Driscoll, winner of a dozen Paralympic medals and 8 Boston Marathon championships. One of the greatest honors of my life was representing the University of Illinois and the United States of America as an athlete, both domestically and abroad, during the Boston Marathon and other races and meets. I was in orange and blue. When competing in the Olympics, Paralympics, and World Championships, I was in red, white, and blue. There are many stories that could be told, but one of my fondest memories is from the 2000 Sydney Paralympic Games. The final event of the 11-day competition was the marathon. It was also the final event of my athletic career. In a race that came down to a final sprint, I managed to cross the finish line first. The gold medal I received was the last one given before the closing ceremonies began. I watched the U.S. flag being raised in the stadium as the Star Spangled Banner played. My hand was over my heart while singing the words in my head. I do know them. I was intentional about taking in every moment as my eyes welled up with tears. Afterward, I congratulated the women who won the silver and bronze medals, both from Japan. Part of the privilege of representing the USA was developing relationships with athletes from across the country and around the world. This is a point of pride and something I still cherish about the experience. It is customary for athletes from different countries to trade uniform pieces after the closing ceremonies as a sign of goodwill and respect. Quite honestly, though, I never wanted to part with my U.S. clothing, even the t-shirts. I still have most of them and wear several items to this day. There's no question that representing the United States of America was one of the greatest honors of my life. Head to news-gazette.com/podcasts to hear Jean Driscoll discuss her proudest moments, whether it's time to add adaptive athletes to the Illinois Athletics Hall of Fame, her new job in St. Louis, and much more, on the 100th episode of News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. Champaign County's fragile link to the American Revolution. 250 years ago, when the Revolutionary War was in its early stages and the Declaration of Independence was being drafted, debated, and adopted, Champaign County did not exist, nor did Illinois. And, according to historians, it would be almost 50 years before a white man settled in this land of tall grass prairie and swampy woods. Champaign County, 250 years ago, was 750 miles and many decades away from being part of the United States of America. And yet the county has a tenuous link, perhaps two, to the American Revolution. Because record-keeping and handwriting from those days is so poor, there are legitimate questions about whether William Hayes, buried in the Clements Cemetery northeast of Urbana, is a Revolutionary War veteran, as his tombstone states. Further, the grave of Robert Brownfield, who died in 1841 and reportedly was buried at the Reinhardt Cemetery, is nowhere to be found. Neither is the old cemetery, which was near what now is the corner of Perkins and High Cross Roads, about 2 miles south of the Clements Cemetery. Both cemeteries are in the area known as Big Grove, the heavily wooded place where many of the early white Champaign County settlers made their homes. And both men are frequently cited as among the rare Illinois residents who had fought in the Revolutionary War. A 1912 story in the Urbana Courier-Herald said that 4 old soldiers from the war were buried near Urbana. It mentioned William Kirby and Newton Shaw, both of whom are buried at Clements Cemetery. But Kirby was born in 1814, long after the war had ended, and Shaw was born in 1823. A 1956 report by the Illinois Veterans Commission listed 10 Revolutionary War soldiers buried in Champaign County. But that error-filled report even included Henry Sidoras, who was born in 1783, the year the Treaty of Paris was signed, ending the Revolutionary War. There is ample evidence that Brownfield fought in the Revolutionary War. One group, the Hatcher Family's Genealogy Association, said Brownfield, who was born in 1760 in Pennsylvania, served as a guard for supply wagon trains with the Pennsylvania Rangers. After the war, he moved to Kentucky, then Illinois. Remarkably, there is a four-page, 1840 congressional record report from the Committee on Revolutionary Pensions detailing Brownfield's request for a veteran's pension. It noted that in August 1835, Brownfield, then 75 years old and a resident of Champaign County, testified that he had enlisted in the Army in the spring of 1780 and served for about 9 months. The evidence on behalf of Hayes' Revolutionary War service is less compelling, but there are no fewer than two gravestones at the Clements Cemetery that contend he fought in the war. At the bottom of an older stone leaning against a fence in the cemetery is an inscription. He was a soldier in the Revolutionary War. The stone is decorated with the flag of 13 stars. A newer stone claims that Hayes was a corporal in Colonel Benjamin Ruggles, Woolbridge's Massachusetts Regiment. But that regiment was formed the day after the Revolutionary War began, and was active only from 1775 to 1777. Hayes was born in 1765, meaning that he would have been a preteen soldier during his time with the regiment. More likely, Hayes was a veteran of the War of 1812. Found online is an application, dated February 6, 1880, from his widow, Sarah Hayes, then 87, and a resident of Urbana, for a War of 1812 widow's pension. The application said that William Hayes served as a private in the infantry from Ohio, and that after the war, the couple lived in Ohio until 1839, then moved to Indiana for 3 years, and finally to Champaign County, where he lived until his death in 1852. Tom Kasich is retired after 50 years with the News Gazette. History. Area History in 1926. As part of the nation's sesquicentennial celebration, thousands are expected in Crystal Lake Park to watch Zev, the famous hurdling horse of Troop E, leap a human hurdle consisting of a brave sergeant. Troop members will also thrill the crowd with Cossack riding, daredevil leaps through fire, Roman riding, and a rescue race. The rodeo will be followed by a band concert with dancing and a fireworks display, expected to excel that of any previous year. In 1976, if you're getting ready to overdose on Bicentennial Pap this weekend, the Bent Bicentennial Film Festival offers a ready antidote. Starting at 9 p.m. today and Saturday, 6 hours of satirical short films will run at the McKinley Foundation. That works out to 3 cents a film, and anyone who has ever seen Bambi Meets Godzilla knows how much humor you can pack into a few minutes of film. And in this bicentennial year, any form of subversiveness should be applauded. In 2011, after 3 tough years for the restaurant business, the National Restaurant Association is forecasting a positive year for the industry in 2011. In Champaign-Urbana, however, there's been a spate of recent restaurant closings, from quick-service restaurants to full-service ones, prompting many to ask, has the economic downturn been keeping customers at home? Are there too many restaurants? Was it the food, the service? The most recent restaurants to shutter include Carmen's, Batita's, and Tang Dynasty. Plus, Guadalajara, 6-Minute Chinese, East Asian Buffet, Sandella's, and V. Picasso have all closed in the last year. International history, today's highlight. On July 3, 1863, the Civil War Battle of Gettysburg in Pennsylvania ended in a major victory for the North as Confederate troops failed to breach Union positions during Pickett's charge. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today. Courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with, on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@news-gazette.com. Morgan Frush's first foray into bartending 5 years ago was not as easy as simply stepping behind the bar. She was trained on the job while working at Jupiter's Pizzeria. "I had to wait tables for a long time before they would train me behind the bar," Frush said. "I believe I learned from the best, though." Now she's serving as a bartender at the 25 O'Clock Brewing Company over in Urbana. Frush says folks should come down and enjoy the patio overlooking Boneyard Creek. She also recommends it for large groups, since the brewery has big tables to accommodate them. It's very Cheers-esque, so if you like making friends and interesting conversation, come on by, she said. If you're looking for a new drink to try out, Frush suggests the Perpetual Brat, a pomegranate sour ale brewed in-house. She said it's also good as a shandy when combined with house-made ginger ale. Over the last few years, she's found that the best things about being a bartender are the friendships she's made and interesting people she's met. "I've navigated what to major in at college by talking to people at the brewery. It really is a wonderful and supportive community atmosphere," Frush said. If not at the brewery, you might catch Frush as a bud tender over at Cloud Nine Cannabis, hanging out at Rose Bowl Tavern, or working on classwork for her studies at University of Illinois. She loves art and music as well as staying involved locally, so she says you'll see her somewhere around town anytime. Lincoln Memorial. Former Olympian indicted for alleged reflecting pool vandalism. Washington. A former Olympian was indicted Thursday on a felony charge in what President Donald Trump has called vandalism of the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool, where a renovation project he launched has been riddled with problems. David Hearn, a former Olympic canoe racer, was indicted on a single count of property destruction in Washington, D.C. court. District of Columbia U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro said Hearn ripped up recently installed sealant on the pool in a deliberate act that caused more than $1,000 in damage. She accused him of forcefully and violently pulling up the bottom liner with both hands and acting belligerently toward an employee who told him to stop. "This is a case with tremendous evidence," she said, adding that authorities have made about six other misdemeanor arrests. In a statement, Democracy Defenders Fund co-founder Norm Eisen and Mary Dorman, senior counsel at Washington Litigation Group, said that they represented Hearn and that the charges were outrageous and should be alarming to every American. Eisen and Dorman construed the case as representatives of the misuse of government power against an ordinary citizen based on a concocted narrative. Hearn didn't immediately return a phone call seeking comment. He previously told the Associated Press that he reached into the pool on June 19th to examine the newly peeled coating. He said he briefly touched a chunk that was still attached to the side of the pool, then let go shortly after a park worker told him to. Image shows a man taking a photo of the Lincoln Memorial from behind a fence last week in Washington, D.C. The fencing was installed after President Donald Trump claimed that vandalism damaged the pool, despite evidence that the issue stemmed from a no-bid renovation he authorized. Tierney L. Cross, Getty Images. Kathy Reiser's Mailbag. Did CU Public Health change its online inspection reports database. I can't seem to look up inspection reports by restaurant name now. CU Public Health District Director of Environmental Health, Sarah Michaels, confirmed that the district's newest software platform, launched earlier this year, does not accommodate searches by the name of the restaurant or other food service location. The DBA in public health parlance. The new food service inspection report format is part of a larger software platform that will strengthen our ability to deliver modern, reliable, and connected tools that support both our team and the communities we serve, says the notice on the agency's website. Rather than look up a specific restaurant by name, the software allows lookups by address. Some restaurants have multiple locations, which may include brick-and-mortar eateries and/or mobile operations. For people who want to stay on top of all recent inspections, the Environmental Health home screen has a tab that is linked to the most recent site visits and inspections completed each day, Michaels said. To get current online health inspections data, point your browser to c-uphd.org. Under the Departments tab, click on Environmental Health. On that page, you'll find links to the data, instructions for accessing the data, and a form for submitting an environmental health complaint. Environmental Health provides public access to the last year of health inspections. You can search for an establishment record using the case number, inspection type, address, or date of inspection. Our office will provide an updated, alphabetized list of completed inspections every month, Michael said. How many people went through the History Museum's Forging Liberty exhibit at the Champaign Library? The place was packed last Sunday. Champaign County History Museum Board President T.J. Blakeman said more than 1,400 people came to see the exhibit of original and very early reproduction documents for the fight for independence in the American colonies, and the response was overwhelmingly positive. Visitors repeatedly shared how meaningful it was to stand just inches away from the original documents and artifacts connected to America's founding. We are especially grateful to the Champaign Public Library for its outstanding partnership. The library was a tremendous host, and this collaboration showed what is possible when local institutions work together to bring high-quality educational programming to the public. He said the exhibit's popularity strengthened our determination to maintain this momentum as we work toward building a larger museum, one capable of hosting exhibits and programs like this regularly. That larger vision is essential to fulfilling our mission, educating the public about the history of Champaign County and its place within the broader story of our nation. At a time when the American populace seems deeply divided, Blakeman said the exhibit offered something important: a chance for people to come together around the story of America. These documents and artifacts are rare and important, but their value is not only historical. They remind us of sacrifice, disagreement, courage, compromise, and the difficult work of building a nation. Blakeman said the four-day exhibit's attendance figure was a sign our community values history and understands the importance of preserving it. More importantly, it shows that even in a partisan time, we can still gather as neighbors to reflect on our shared past, celebrate America, and consider the ideals we are responsible for carrying forward. For readers who may have missed the exhibit, its visitor guide is available online. For anyone who would like a keepsake, printed copies are available at the museum, 102 East University Avenue in Champaign. Is anything happening with the proposed ice rink for downtown Champaign? An online survey is underway to gauge community support for such a project, according to Dan Johnson, an avid supporter of the project and one of the people behind the survey. We're reaching out to gain support for the development of a community ice rink in downtown Champaign, Illinois, Johnson said in a recent email to prospective supporters. This project has the potential to provide meaningful benefits to the community, including increased foot traffic and economic activity for downtown businesses. Additionally, there would be future opportunities for sponsorship and advertisements. Our goal is to connect with the appropriate individuals and organizations to demonstrate both the need for this facility and the level of community interest behind it. There is no financial obligation, just a demonstration of interest. The survey's intro says, "We are hockey parents and downtown Champaign property owners. Royce White Downtown. Exploring the idea of building a brand new ice arena right here in the downtown Champaign area. Whether you skate, play hockey, coach, or just enjoy hot cocoa in the bleachers, your opinion matters. Your feedback will help us determine if an additional feasibility study is needed." Colin Carlier, CEO of Royce and Brinkmeyer, said Royce Witt Downtown previously presented their ideas to University of Illinois Campus Recreation and the members of the university student body at an open forum in October 2025. Later this month, they will make another presentation to a different community group that may be interested in the project. An exact location for a new ice rink has not been determined, but it is likely to be near the Royce Witt Downtown's Inman Apartments property and not far from the Illinois Terminal Transit Hub. Several properties in that area of downtown are available for sale. Anyone who would like to respond to the survey will find it at form.typeform.com/2/YMGD1SUN. Questions and comments may be emailed to champagneneedsicerink@gmail.com. Image. Developers of potential ice rink may be eyeing any of several large parcels of land that are for sale south of Logan Street in between Walnut, Neal Streets, and the Canadian National Railroad tracks. Kathy Reiser. A few of the new mast arms on US 45 South are fully or partially obscuring drivers' view of some current traffic signals. Will IDOT bump those intersections to the top of the list to activate the new signals sooner rather than later? All of the signalized intersections along US 45 between Springfield Avenue in Champaign and Curtis Road in Savoy are getting signal upgrades this summer. Some of those intersections have the red and yellow light visibility issue the reader described, while others don't. The new lights are in the process of being installed and are placed in each quadrant in a location that fits as space and utilities allow, Garnett said. The existing signals must remain in place until the new signals are complete. It's unfortunate this situation has occurred. A resident engineer overseeing the project is currently coordinating with the electrical contractor to prioritize these locations. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for July 3rd, 2026. Please stay tuned.